Harper Audio presents I Am Number 4, The Lost Files, Hidden Enemy, by Pittacus Lore. Performed by Jonathan McLean and McLeod Andrews.
Chapter 1.
The Moogs are here.
My eyes shoot open as I jerk upright, hoping that sentence was just something from a bad dream. But it's not.
They're here,
Ray whispers again as he crosses over the floor of our little shack to where I'm sleeping on top of a pallet of blankets. I'm off the floor in seconds. Ray's solar-powered lantern swings in front of my face, and it blinds me. I flinch away, and then he turns it off, leaving me in complete darkness. As he pushes me towards the back of our home, all I can make out is a sliver of silver light peeking through the window.
Out the back.
His voice is full of urgency and fear.
I'll hold them off. Go, go, go!
I start grabbing at the air where he'd stood moments before, but find nothing. I can't see anything. My eyes still burn from the lantern. Ray!
No!
He cuts me off from somewhere in the dark.
If you don't go now, we're both dead.
There's a clattering near the front of the shack, followed by the sound of something or someone slamming against the front door. Ray lets out a pained cry, but the inside of the shack is still nothing but an abyss of black in my eyes. I know there's a metal bar over the door that's not going to hold up against much more than a little force. It's for show more than anything else. If someone really wanted into our shack, they could just blow through the flimsy wooden walls. And if it's the Moogs... There's no time to think, only to react. It's me they're after. I've got to get to safety. I rip away the piece of cloth that serves as a makeshift curtain and throw myself through the little window. I land with a plop in a 3-inch puddle of mud, slop, and things I don't even want to imagine. I'm in the hog pen. A single thought runs through my mind. I'm going to die a 13-year-old boy covered in pig shit on an island in the middle of nowhere. Life is so unfair. The hogs squeal. I've disturbed their sleep, and it snaps me back into the moment. Old training regimens and lectures from years before take over my brain, and I'm moving again, checking my flanks to make sure there are no Moogs that have already made their way to the back of the hut. I start to think about what their plan of action might be. If the Moogs actually knew I was on the island, I'd be surrounded already. No. It must be a single scout that stumbled upon us by accident. Maybe he had time to report us to the others. Maybe not. Whatever the case, I have to get out of the line of fire. Ray will take out the scout. He'll be fine. At least, that's what I tell myself, choosing to ignore how frail Ray's looked lately. He has to be okay. He always is. I head for the jungle behind our shack. My bare feet sink into the sand, as if the island itself is trying to slow me down. I'm dressed only in dark athletic shorts, and branches and shrubs around me scratch at my bare chest and stomach as I enter the cover of the trees. I've done this sort of thing before, once in Canada. Then, coats and a few bags weighed me down. But we'd had a little more warning. Now, in the sticky, hot night of the Caribbean, I'm weighed down only by my lack of stamina. As I hurl myself through the dense vegetation, I think of all the mornings I was supposed to spend jogging along the beach or hiking through the forest that I actually spent playing solitaire or simply lazing around, doing what I really wanted to do, like drawing little cartoons in the sand, coming up with short stories told by stick figures. Ray always said I shouldn't actually write anything down, that any journal or notes I wrote could be found and used as proof of who I am. But writing and drawing in the sand was temporary. When the tide came in, my stories were gone. Even just doing that caused me to work up a sweat in this damned climate. And I'd return to Ray, pretending to be exhausted, He'd comment on the timing of my imaginary run and then treat me to a rich lunch as a reward. Ray is a taskmaster when it comes to doling out things to do. But his lungs are bad, and he always trusted that I was doing the training he told me to do. He had no reason not to, no reason to think I wouldn't take our situation seriously. It wasn't just the avoidance of having to work my ass off in the heat that kept me from training. It was the monotony of it all that I hated. Run, lift, stretch, aim, repeat. Day in and day out. Plus, we're living out in the middle of nowhere. Our island isn't even on any maps. I never thought the Moogs would ever find us. Now, I'm afraid that's coming back to haunt me. I wheeze as I run. I'm totally unprepared for this attack. Those mornings lazing around the beach are going to get me killed. It doesn't take long before there's a stitch in my side, so sore that I think it's possible I've burst some kind of internal organ. I'm out of breath, and the humid air feels like it's trying to smother me. My hands grasp onto low-hanging branches as I half-pull my way through thick green foliage, the bottoms of my feet scraping against fallen limbs and razor-sharp shells. Within a few minutes, the canopy above me is so dense that only pinpricks of the moonlight shine through. The jungle has given way to a full-blown rainforest. I'm alone in the dark in a rainforest, with alien monsters chasing after me. I pause, panting and holding my side. Our island is small, but I'm only maybe a fifth of the way across it. On the other side of the island, a small, hidden kayak is waiting for me, along with a pack of rations and first aid gear. The last chance escape vessel, something that'll let me slip into the dark of the night and disappear on the ocean. But that seems so far away now, with my lungs screaming at me and my bare feet bleeding. I lean against a tree, trying to catch my breath. Something skitters across the forest floor a few feet away from me, and I jump. But it's only one of the little green lizards that overrun the island. Still, my heart pounds. My head is dizzy. The Mogadorians are here. I'm going to die. I can't imagine what Ray is doing back at the shack. How many Moogs are here? How many can he take on? I hope I'm right, and it's just a single scout. I realize I haven't heard any gunshots. Is that a good sign? Or does it mean the bastards got to him before he was able to fire off a single round? Keep going, I tell myself, and then start out again. My calves are burning, and my lungs feel like they're about to split open every time I inhale. I stumble, hitting the ground hard and knocking what little breath I had out of me. Somewhere behind me, I can hear movement in the trees. I glance around. Without a clear view of the sky, I can't even tell which direction I'm going anymore. I'm totally screwed. I have to do something. I abandon the plan to cross the island. I'm in no shape to do so. For a moment, I think of burrowing down into the brush, maybe finding something to hide in until I can slip through the forest. But then I think of all the fist-sized spiders and ants and snakes that could be waiting there for me, and imagine a Mogadorian scout stepping on me by accident. So I head up instead. Gathering every ounce of strength I have, I use a few sturdy vines to pull myself hand over hand up to a low branch on a nearby tree. All I can think of are the many different types of beasts Ray's told me the Moogs can command, any one of which would like nothing more than to tear me apart. Why don't we have giant hell beasts to fight for us? My arms are shaking by the time I squat on the limb, the wood creaking under my weight as I stare into the blackness, hoping over and over again that nothing will emerge from it, that I can just wait this out, that it will all just go away. There's no telling how much time passes. If I'd been more put together, or hadn't been so taken by surprise, I might have remembered to grab my watch on the way out the window. It's weird. Time always seemed like it didn't mean anything on the island, and now it means everything. How many minutes before more of them arrive? How many seconds before they find me? I try to keep from trembling, and my stomach from turning over. Between the running, my fear, and the damp smell of pig that clings to me in a thick coat of sludge, I'm teetering on the edge of vomiting. Maybe the stinking layer of crap will help keep me camouflaged, at least. It's not a very reassuring silver lining. Finally, a silhouette starts to take shape in the darkness. I draw in closer to the tree. The figure is human-sized, maybe even a little hunched over, leaning on a cane as he steps into the dim moonlight. He's wearing a blue linen shirt, khaki cargo pants, and sneakers that might have been white at some point. His beard is white, streaked with black, his wild hair almost silver. I recognize him immediately, of course. Ray. He's got something held against him, wrapped in a piece of cloth. I start to call down to him, but he's already staring holes into me, his lips quivering, as if he's fighting every urge to yell. He simply stands there, the silence hanging in the thick air between us. Finally, I break it. Well, did you get him? Ray doesn't respond immediately, just looks away, staring down at the ground.
What did you forget?
His voice has a slight rattle to it. What? I ask, my breath short. He throws his parcel down on the ground. Part of the cloth falls back, and I can make out a familiar corner. The chest? I ask. My Loric chest. The most sacred thing I own. The treasure I'm not actually allowed to look into. The container that supposedly holds my inheritance and the tools to rebuild my home planet. And I can't even peek inside until Ray thinks I'm ready to. Whatever that means.
The chest, Ray nods.
I scramble down the tree, half falling to the earth. We should get going, right? I ask. My words are spilling out now, my tongue stumbling over the letters as I try to say a million things at once. You don't have any weapons? Or our food? Where are we going now? Shouldn't we be...
Your chest is the second most important thing you have to protect after your own life. It was stupid to leave it. Next time, it's your priority to keep it safe.
What are you...
You made it half a mile into the forest, he says, ignoring me.
His voice is getting louder now, filled with barely restrained anger.
I didn't want to believe it, but I guess this is proof. You haven't been doing your training. You've been lying to me about it every day.
Ray...
I already knew that, though.
He sounds sad now.
I could tell just by looking at you.
My mind is racing, trying to figure out why we're still standing here. Why he's worried about my training when there could be a whole fleet of Moogs on their way after us. Unless... There aren't any Moogs here, I say quietly. Ray just shakes his head and stares at the ground. This was a test. No, worse than that. This was Ray's way of trapping me and catching me in a lie. And even though, yes, I technically have been less than honest about my training regimen, I can't believe Ray would scare me like this. Are you kidding me? Unlike Ray, I don't have the power to keep my anger from clouding my voice. I was running for my life! I thought I was going to die!
Death is the least of your worries for now,
he says, pointing at my ankle. Underneath the layer of mud and crap is an ugly red mark that appeared a few days ago, a mark that's starting to scab over and will soon turn into a scar, the mark that, thanks to some otherworldly charm, shows me that another one of my fellow guard has been murdered. Two is dead. Three and four are all that stand between death and me. I am number five. I suddenly feel stupid for thinking I was about to be killed. Of course I wasn't. Numbers three and four have to die before I can. I should have been worried about being captured and tortured for information. Not that Ray ever tells me anything. And I realize what this is about. Ever since the scar appeared, it's like something within Ray snapped. He's been getting sicker the last few years, and I'm not anywhere as strong as he thinks I should be. I haven't developed any of the magic powers I'm supposed to have. Neither of us can put up a good fight. That's why we're here on this stupid island, hiding. Ray's eyes have been on the ground, but he finally raises them to mine, looking at me for a long moment. Then he nods at the chest.
"Carry it back," he says.
Then he's shuffling off into the darkness, leaving me in the sparse moonlight, staring at the duffel bag that contains my chest. We weren't under attack. It was only a test. I'm not going to die on the island. At least, not tonight. I pick up my chest, hugging it close to me, letting the corners dig into my stomach. I stare into the blackness that Ray has disappeared into. And in that moment, there's only one emotion filling me. Not fear or relief, or even shame for being found out. It's the feeling that the only person I have in this world has betrayed me. Chapter 2. The sun rises as I wash off in the ocean and think of Canada, the first place I remember living here on Earth. I really liked Canada. In Canada, we ate butter tarts and French fries covered in gravy and rubbery globs of cheese, all served out of carts on the sides of the roads. Even when it was summer there, it wasn't all that hot. I learned a little bit of French. Ray didn't like the cold, but I did. He was Albert in Canada, a name he'd picked after seeing Alberta on a map, thinking it would make him sound like more of a local. "Old Al," he called himself sometimes when talking to servers or cashiers. I always thought it was funny when he dumbed his personality down and pretended to be my grandfather at times like that, using words like whippersnapper that he'd picked up from the TV. No one questioned the kindly old man and his grandson. I was Cody then. I liked being Cody. I was a person, not just five. At night, Ray would tell me about Lorien and the Mogadorians and the other guard, my kindred spirits scattered across the world, and how one day we'd bring about the glorious return of our home planet. Back then, everything seemed like a fairy tale. All the aliens and powers and other worlds were nothing but stories to get me to do my chores. Didn't clean up after yourself? Lorien didn't stand a chance. Forget to brush your teeth? The Mogs would get you for sure. Then they actually came. We'd been living up near Montreal for 6 months, maybe a whole year, when Ray found out they were coming for us. I'm still not sure how. All I know is that suddenly I was running through the woods behind our little cottage while a few Mogadorians tracked me. I was 6 years old, scared out of my mind. Eventually, I'd hidden in a tree. I thought I was a goner until Ray appeared, taking out the Mogs with a broken-off shovel and a shotgun he'd bought on the black market. He's always been good with tools. "Albert," I'd said from the tree. We always called each other by our false names, never knowing who was listening. "Are they gone?"
"Albert's dead," Ray had said.
I knew what he meant, even though I was so young. I'd felt it in my gut. It meant we weren't safe. It meant we couldn't stay there, in that place I liked so much. So we went on the move, and we didn't stop for a long time. Ray was Aaron after that, followed by Andy, Jeffrey, and then James. I was Zach, Carson, and then Bolt, which was the last name I got to pick before Ray started choosing them. Maybe I'm forgetting a few in there. It all seems so long ago. I know that I was Carson when Ray's cough first appeared, along with the dark hollows under his eyes. We were camping in the Appalachians. He thought it was the cold that was making him sick, so we started moving south, making our way through the United States and towards a warmer climate. Eventually, after a few sketchy boat rides Ray arranged for us, we set up camp in Martinique, where we stayed for a while. But Ray's cough just got worse. He kept telling me he was feeling better, but at some point I stopped believing him. I was always the better liar. As a kid, I thought of lies as little stories or games, Sometimes people we came across would ask questions. Where were my parents? Where was I born? And I'd just start talking, making up these elaborate histories for Ray and me. Having secrets means you do a lot of lying. Not because you're evil or a bad person or anything like that, but out of necessity. Really, Ray trained me to lie about all those morning runs and hikes. I make a mental note to tell him this later. Sometimes I wonder if Ray is crazy. Like, what if he's just a really messed up old guy who stole me from a loving, normal home, and all of this alien stuff is simply made up? Maybe he gave me drugs or brainwashed me into having fake memories of some place that couldn't possibly exist. All my life, I've heard about Lorien. But the only proof I have that any of it is true is a few weird-looking guys who came after me in Canada. Well, that plus two scars that appeared like magic on my ankle, and a chest that's supposed to house all kinds of treasures. A chest that doesn't open no matter how much you prod at it. I know, because I've tried about a million times to find out what's inside over the years. The treasure of Lorien. Sure. A lot of good it's doing out here in the middle of nowhere. I don't mind the beach, really. I mean, I get why people go there on vacation. When we first got to the Caribbean, we stuck to the bigger, more populated resorts, just living on the fringes. We'd watch the tourists roll in every year, their brand new beach clothes a parade of bright colors as they sipped drinks out of giant coconuts and pineapples that weren't even native to the islands. Not that they'd have known. But when one died, when that first scar formed on my ankle, Ray flipped out. I was 9 years old, and it was like the final string keeping him in check snapped, and he went into full-on survival mode. No more people. We'd have to live life completely off the grid. And so he'd cashed in whatever possessions we had, bought a few supplies and a small sailboat, and headed out to find the most deserted, godforsaken place he could. Gone were the restaurants and air conditioning. No more TV, video games, or hot showers. Just a beach and a shack. I don't know what kind of deal Ray must have struck to find this island, but I'll give him one thing. It must be hidden away pretty well. A few times a year people mistakenly wash ashore here, but Ray always gets rid of them fast. And that's where I am now. Washing up in the ocean. A dark cloud forms around my body as I scrub the pig shit off in the clear water at the shoreline. That's what the future holds for the great number 5, one of the 7 most important people left on the planet. It's not fair. I remember watching old kung fu movies on cable right before we came out here. The main characters were always going to the tops of mountains to train with ancient masters who taught them to throw ninja stars and kill people with chopsticks and stuff. When one died and Ray moved us to the island, he told me he was no longer the grandfather he'd pretended to be, but my teacher. I'd be his disciple. And I was excited about this at the time. I thought I was going to live out one of those old movies or something. And at first, I did do the training. Ray could still walk and move well then, so we practiced rudimentary martial arts moves. But soon he was sleeping most of the day and trusting that I was doing everything he told me to do. Life on the island turned out to be nothing like those old movies. In those, it'd only take a 5-minute montage for the student to become the master. On the island, the training was brutal, unending, and above all, monotonous. I used to dream of being taken away, that the guard would all show up one day and tell me they'd been looking for me, and that they were going to take me to their space clubhouse or something. But for all I know, the other guard don't care about me at all.
5, Ray calls from the shore.
Here, where there's no one, there's no point in pretending to be who we're not. What? I yell back, still mad about this morning.
Come here,
he says. I glance up to see him waving me toward the shack. Instead of listening to him, I fall backwards, letting myself float in the warm water as the sun creeps higher over the horizon.
5, get...
But his shout is interrupted by a fit of coughing. For some reason, this just adds to my annoyance. I'm one of the 9 guard, Lorien's last hope, and this is who they sent to protect me? Out of all their magic and powers, he was the best they could do to keep me safe? A magic numbering system and a 6 sapon to look after me. Thanks a lot. A terrible thought rises in my mind, and even though I try to ignore it, it's there, taunting me, making me hate myself not only for having it, but for thinking that it might be true. The ray that was supposed to protect me died a long time ago, before he got sick, when we were still in Canada with the cold air and hot food, when I was just a little kid. I hate this feeling, the bitterness that sometimes bubbles up to the surface when I'm upset with Ray. It's not his fault he's sick, I know that, but he's the only person I have to be mad at. The coughing continues. I crack, and I'm headed up the shore, toes digging into the sand. I shake my brown hair to try and dry it. It's been a long time since I had a proper haircut, and my hair is long and matted against my neck. I pick up a coconut that's fallen from a palm tree as I pass by it. We can break it open and have the sweet meat with breakfast, if I'm even getting breakfast. Ray's no doubt about to chew my ass out and probably send me into the forest to live on my own for a few days to teach me a lesson about lying. He's breathing normally again by the time I reach him. "You shouldn't be out here," I say. "You should be resting." He ignores me and holds a hatchet out. Behind him, I can hear the hogs freaking out about something. They sound spooked. This is the give and take of our relationship. Neither of us doing the things the other one says we should be. "What's this for?" I ask, hesitating to take it. He's probably going to force me to chop wood or something to start making up for this morning. But I'm sure he also would like an apology. But I'll wait until I'm not mad about the whole "tell 5 that aliens are here to murder him" thing.
"To protect us," Ray says, pushing the hatchet closer towards me. "I've coddled you for too long, and now I'm afraid it's too late."
My face scrunches as I shove the coconut under my arm and take the tool. The hogs are still going crazy in their pen. "What's going on?" I ask slowly. I'm suddenly afraid he's going to have me butcher one of the pigs. I mean, I'm totally on board with eating them. I just don't want to have to kill them myself. Ray nods towards the pen. The pigs are running around, snorting like mad. If they could scream, I'm guessing that's what they'd be doing. And then I see why. They're telling us that something has infiltrated their home, that danger has come for them. On the other side of the pen is a coiled-up length of scales and muscles. A viper, a lance head. Nasty little bastards with a habit of making their homes a little too close to humans. Once, in Martinique, I saw a boy who was 13 or so, about my age now, who was being carried on a backboard to the hospital. He was suffering from a lancehead bite. Well, suffering might not actually be the right word. He was unconscious, and the bottom half of his left leg from the knee to the foot was a mess of black and green, like he'd been bitten by a zombie or something. It was the only lesson I ever needed in keeping an eye out for slithering when walking through the forest. It's not the first one I've seen on the island. Usually Ray takes care of any that wander too close to us.
"Kill it," Ray says.
I stare at the coiled snake. The last thing I want to do is get close to it. It's not that I'm a coward. I just don't want to end up losing a limb. And there's something else. I've never killed anything before. Nothing bigger than a spider or one of the giant mosquitoes that plague us here. "Why?"
"You have to," Ray says. "If you don't, it'll kill one of the hogs. Or us. Either way, we'll be in for more trouble than is necessary."
I can't. I mean... But I don't have any real argument to make. My fingers uncurl from around the hatchet I'm holding and it falls to the sandy beach. The coconut falls beside it, and I realize I'm shaking.
"You do it,"
Ray mutters something under his breath. "You're supposed to keep me out of danger," I argue, trying to save some face. "I mean, that's what your job is, right?"
"My job is to help you get prepared for what's to come," Ray says, snatching the tool from the ground with a chastising quickness. "If you can't kill a simple snake, what are you going to do if the Moogs discover you and you find yourself up against an actual enemy, huh? One that can think and understand you. One that's been trained to take you out. What are you going to do when it's just you and no one..."
His rant is interrupted by another fit of coughing, and Ray buries his face in the tattered sleeve of his blue linen shirt. When he finally stops, he spits blood on the ground. Blood. He talks softly, more to himself than to me.
"Maybe I should have spent more time teaching you to fight instead of hiding. I thought I could hide you away until you were stronger, but I failed to make sure you developed like I should have. I was too weak. The other guard, they'll probably have already gotten their first legacies by now. Probably masters of all kinds of weapons and combat."
"Hide well enough, and you'll never have to fight," I say, parroting one of his favorite lessons. I'm trying to make him happy now, but I just keep thinking about the fact that he's coughing up blood. That's bad. That's what always happens in the movies a few scenes before a character dies. I ignore it and keep talking. "We can start doing more fight training again. I'll do it, I promise. I'll get good at it." Ray doesn't respond, just nods a little bit and turns away. The hogs squeal louder. The viper is up and ready to strike now, warning off the animals and humans around it, its body swaying slightly in the air like a constricted S.
"I'm afraid I've failed you as a Sepan," Ray says.
He holds a hand out and grips my shoulder, squeezing it once. He smiles, but it's a sad, far-off sort of expression. When did he start looking so old? Ray turns and throws the hatchet with a flick of his arm. It sails through the air, spinning horizontally. The blade hits the snake a few inches below its head, and then embeds itself into the side of our little shack. The pigs scramble to the far side of the pen as the serpent's body wriggles frantically on the ground, its nerves working out the last of their power. Ray just keeps walking, hunched over, with a shuffle in his steps. I don't respond to Ray's comment. I don't think he expected me to. Instead, I replay what he said earlier about how the other guard would probably be so much more advanced than me, so much more prepared for the future. I feel like a disappointment. But then part of that is his fault too, right? It's not just me. It's not my fault. The last place I want to be is inside the hut with him now, or anywhere near the dead viper in our backyard. So I grab the coconut and get an old parasol that's leaning against the shack and head farther down the beach, to where the trees give way to nothing but sand and crystal blue water. I sit near the tide's edge and plant the giant umbrella in the sand beside me, unfurling it. I burn easily, even after a few years of living in the tropics. I'm not meant for this sort of environment. I should be somewhere else. Ray seems to have decided that if we're out of sight and hidden, we'll never have to fight. Which is a good thing, since I don't think either of us could stand a chance against the Moogs. Which also means we can't leave. I'm stuck here with Ray and the hogs, and a forest full of deadly snakes and spiders and God knows what else. I dig little ditches in the beach with my heels and sink my toes into the soft earth, cooling them down, and stare at the two scars on my ankle. I know Ray's right. If the Moogs showed up, I'd be defenseless. I'd have to rely on him to fight for me. I'm a failed guard with a frail Sepan. Again, I can't help but think that Lorien has cheated me in all this. Surely this wasn't how the elders had meant everything to be. In the pocket of my shorts, I find a little red rubber ball I've had for ages, the kind you get for a quarter in convenience store toy machines. I let it roll over the back of my hand, across my knuckles, then between my fingers, over and over again. A little sleight-of-hand craftiness. I shouldn't be here. The thought floats through my head again. I glance over at the little sailboat that's tied to a post up the beach. It would be so easy to just get in, cast off, and float to the nearest civilization. Martinique isn't far away, if I remember correctly. They have restaurants and hot showers and carnivals there, street fairs packed with games and every type of food you could ever want. Not that far away. Oh, it would be so easy. I stare at the coconut as I grow more and more frustrated with the state of my life. My right hand curls into a fist at my side, shaking. A jolt of energy rushes through me. Something I've never felt before. The hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. The coconut explodes. For a second, I'm stunned. Then I just stare at my hands. Did I just do that? Chapter 3. There's a name for the power I have. Telekinesis. It's the first of my legacies, my special gifts. I know this because Ray has told me for years that this day would come. I'd almost stopped believing him, but they're here now. I can feel the energy coursing through my veins. I can feel the power. It feels good. With just one exploded piece of fruit, I suddenly have a newfound outlook on life. I see a future that doesn't include this island. If I can move things with my mind, I can wipe out enemies, knock down entire armies. People will look up to me, maybe even fear me. And Ray, he'll never look at me like I've disappointed him again. He'll know he hasn't failed me as a Saipan. I don't tell him about the coconut or my newfound ability. I keep it a secret, practicing with it in my free time. I'm going to get good at it, and then show him how capable I am by pulling a tree out of the ground and batting away our little shack. Or something. Something big to prove to him that we no longer need to be on the island, that I'm ready to get out of here and back into the real world, because I'll be able to fight the Moogs if they show up now. I'm so tired of this damned sun and humidity, this island. I'll show him. He'll take us somewhere else. I start out with coconuts. They're light and easy to crack, and I rip them apart with my power. I let the small green ones float above my mouth and drink the sweet-tasting water from inside. Then I slingshot them into the ocean, where they fly through the air and blend in with the sky before splashing down into the salty water on the horizon. The only problem is that Ray is being better at making sure I actually am running all the miles I'm supposed to. He started popping up at random places around the island, stopwatch in hand, making sure I'm jogging, or at least walking really quickly. Fortunately, that seems to take a lot of energy out of him, because he spends the rest of the day napping. Perfect time for me to hone my badass new superpower. I move on from coconuts to rocks and fallen logs. On the end of the island opposite our shack, I haul in a huge piece of driftwood against the tide with nothing more than force of will. The larger, heavier objects are a little harder to maneuver at first, but I'm getting better at it, building my telekinetic muscles. This is the best I've felt in months. On the day I've decided to tell Ray about my powers, thick black clouds start to roll in from the sea. I recognize what this means. The wet season is approaching, and it's going to be nothing but rain for the next few months. I stop halfway through my morning jog and practice my power just a little more. I find a log on the ground and toss coconuts into the air, trying to bat them into the sea like some giant's version of baseball. I don't know how long I stand there trying before I actually make contact with one of the coconuts. It's not the home run I've been imagining. Both the coconut and the dead branch shatter, sending bits of wood and coconut milk raining down on me. But the destruction is incredibly satisfying. It's only then that I realize the sun is higher in the sky than I expected, and I wonder how long I've been standing there. My face is sunburned. I can feel it stinging as I head back to the hut. My stomach rumbles. I hope Ray's made lunch already. I see his white hair first, It's practically shimmering in the sunlight. He's face down in the sand, just around the next curve in the shore. My heart stops. I yell his name as I run to him, over and over until my throat burns. No, I think, as I run. And shit! Those two words repeat in my head as I get closer, trying to figure out how he got there and if he's moving at all. I practically slide into him in the sand, kicking up a little cloud around us. I roll him over. Grit and sand stick to one side of his face.
Ray! Ray, wake up! Ray, can you hear me?
His chest is rising up and down, but just barely. I stop talking long enough to hear his breath, which is wet and shallow. I wonder how long he's been out here, why he's so far away from the shack to begin with. But it's obvious. He was out making sure I was training, or trying to figure out what was taking me so long, looking for me. It's my fault he's like this. He's too heavy to lift with my body, but I can lift him with my legacy. I jog beside him as his body flies through the air, lifted by my telekinesis. He'd be so proud if he could see everything I was doing right now. If he'd just wake up. I've spent the last few days honing my power and thinking of how I could survive anything now that my first legacy has surfaced. But if Ray dies, I don't know what I'll do. Every time I've ever thought of abandoning him or running away from the island on my own, I've always known in the back of my mind that there's no way I could do that. Even sick and frail, Ray is the only one I have in the world, on this planet that's not even technically my home. By the time we reach the shack, I'm frantic. Inside, there's nothing much. We sleep on mats surrounded by netting. But his mat is elevated like an actual bed. I set him down, then scramble around trying to figure out what I can do to help. There are a few barrels of water. I fill a cup and bring it to him. But of course he's not awake to drink. I splash some of it on his face, but I'm too afraid it's going to go up his nose and into his lungs to pour the whole cup on him. He doesn't move at all. So I pull up a chair and wait, staring at him, willing him to open his eyes and reprimand me for taking too long on my run. Then we'll cook lunch, and I'll show him how I can lift tree trunks and juggle coconuts just by thinking about it. And he'll be happy. An eternity passes before he speaks my name. It's a rasp, so soft that had I not been sitting in a chair beside him with my eyes glued on his face, I might have missed it.
Five,
Ray says again, then coughs into one of the blankets.
Hold on, I say, springing up. I find the lantern and flip it on, then refill the cup of water and bring it over to him.
He waves it away.
I was looking for you,
he says. His voice is weak, and he only seems half coherent, like he's talking to someone far away.
I know.
I want you to listen to me,
he says, and I shake my head. He just needs to drink some water and rest, and I'll listen to him lecture me later.
I have all the time in the world to listen when you're better. I have nothing to do here except listen to you.
His eyes look at me, but also through me, as if he's struggling to focus on my face.
The guard are still hidden,
he says softly, ignoring what I tell him.
If you go searching for them, you'll expose yourself to the Moogs. You'll be safer here, on your own, until you're stronger.
Ray, it's okay. It's going to be okay. Look, I have to show you what I can do now.
He shakes his head once, and even with how weak he is, it causes me to stop moving and listen. His expression is so solemn. What can I do but hear what he has to say?
My job was to protect you,
he continues.
I know I haven't taught you everything I should have, but I tried. I tried to do my best, but my body didn't agree with this world.
No, I whisper.
It finally seeps in that this might be the end of us. There is something so unnatural about thinking that I might wake up in the morning and Ray would be gone. Not just out on the boat or across the island, but nowhere. Forever. I could probably count the times I didn't know exactly where he was on one hand. His absence is inconceivable. It doesn't compute. Suddenly, I think of all the times I wished for another Saipan or to run away from the island and hate myself. I start to cry, tears falling in salty drops to the floor. Ray starts gasping, and I stand, my chair falling backwards, feeling so helpless as I stare at him. "Just tell me, what do I do to help you?" The gasping turns into a fit of coughing that seems like it will never end. Blood trickles from his mouth. "What do I do?" I repeat. "What do I do?" Finally he speaks, this time in such a low whisper that I have to kneel beside him to hear.
"Stay
alive," he says. His eyes look more lucid now as his hand reaches out and grips my forearm.
"5. Don't follow the Lorik into this war until you're ready. Trust your instincts."
He inhales again, deeply and unevenly.
"When the time comes, trust yourself. You're the future. Do whatever it takes to survive."
His breath rattles again. And then it stops. And then there's nothing. His chest doesn't rise up. His eyes don't open. Everything is quiet and still. The silence is the worst thing I've ever heard. "Ray?" I ask softly, then louder when he doesn't respond, hoping that he just hasn't heard me. Nothing. He's gone. My brain floods. All I can think about are the times I've disobeyed him or cursed him, even if it was only in my head. I'm filled with regret. I'm alone. I run outside. It's the only thing I can do. I'm barely aware that rain is pelting me, signaling the beginning of the wet season. My body shivers, even though the rain is warm. This tiny island suddenly feels huge and full of danger. Random thoughts keep shooting through my brain. You'll have to do something with this body. He never knew how powerful your telekinesis had become. All the chores he'd done on this island are now yours. As I sink down to my knees, there's distant thunder. And the hogs squeal. It's all too much. Alone, except for a bunch of pigs. It takes me a while to catch my breath as I sit on my knees bent over the wet sand. My eyes fall on the reddened scar on my ankle. Two's symbol. I almost laugh. There were 9 of us, and now there are 7. And we're the ones who are supposed to defeat the Mogadorians, an entire army of aliens. And so they sent us to Earth with fragile protectors and scattered us across the globe. Hoping what? That at least one of us would survive? The rain beats down on me. I feel like my head's going to explode, like something's got to burst out of me. I shout from somewhere deep inside. The 2 palm trees nearest to me splinter in half under the power of my legacy. Chapter 4. I bury Ray in the forest. I wanted to send him out to sea, to put him in the sailboat and just push him out. I remember seeing that in some movie about Vikings once, and Ray taught me the basics of sailing. But I was too afraid the currents would push him back to the beach. That I'd wake up one morning and find his body washed up on the shore, eyes pecked out by seabirds and body shriveled up like jerky. I couldn't see that. Burial seemed like the only solution. I couldn't just leave him out in the elements as something for the little green lizards to pick at. So I find a place where there's enough open land, once I've cleared away a few bushes, and start in with the shovel. Digging his grave is the hardest work I've done in a long time. Under different circumstances, I'd joke that this was Ray's last laugh, finally getting me to do some hard labor. But I miss him too much to do that. The rain doesn't let up. For every shovel of mud I scoop out, twice as much floods back in rivers of brown. Before I even realize I'm doing it, I'm punching into the earth with my newfound power, mud coating my body and face. I use my telekinesis to burrow out the rest of the hole and keep the mud back. And then, once he's in the bottom, I let all the mud and sand and earth and water fall in over him. His body is covered almost instantly. He's gone. I carry on, alone on my island, through the wet season. Ray has taught me well how to survive off the land, even if I didn't realize he was doing it at the time. I know which plants to eat and how to keep our shack dry on the inside as the sky continues to dump rain on me day after day. I continue running and training, more so than I ever did when Ray was alive. I keep thinking that someone will show up. If the guards' deaths are burned into my leg, is it the same for the Sepans? Will Ray's mark show up on the Lorik guardian who's looking after 3 or 4? Will one of them come and find me and tell me what I should be doing next? But no one does. And after weeks, maybe even months of waiting for something to happen, I know what I have to do. Ray told me to stay on the island until I was stronger, but he didn't know about my power. I am stronger now. Besides, he also told me to survive. And if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to leave. If I stay, I'll go crazy. Technically, I can do whatever I want. I'm free. There's no one looking after me. I'm alone. I can go anywhere I want. Martinique. It was the last island we were on. I didn't mind it there. And it's close. Or at least, it seemed close when we sailed from there. On a day when the rain finally starts to die down, I act. I empty out Ray's pack and stuff it with some rations. It goes in the sailboat, alongside all the coconuts I can find and several canteens of water. Once I'm on the big island, well, I'll have plenty of time at sea to figure out what to do next. Maybe I'll try to track down the guard. Maybe I'll just find a way to get back to Canada and that home I so liked when I was a kid. I toss my duffel into the boat along with my Lorik chest. I take Ray's big, broad straw hat to keep the sun off me. There's no lower deck to the boat, so I'll be exposed the whole time I'm at sea. My last act is to break down the hog fence. I do it with a single burst of telekinetic power. They'll be fine, I tell myself as they reluctantly cross over the broken wooden slats and onto the beach. They'll get a taste for all those lizards running around. It takes me a few tries to get the 2 sails up on the little boat, and even longer to try to read the sea map I find on board. There are no markings in the place where I think our little island is, but I'm sure that Ray always said we were just east of Martinique. There's a compass and a telescope in the drawer as well. All the things an amateur sailor could need. I want to leave immediately, but I have to wait for high tide, and that means I have to sit around rethinking my decision until dusk. Finally, the ocean rolls in under the boat, and I use my power to push off into the water. Then, I work on adjusting the sails to the direction I need to be going. By the time I get the course set, it's almost completely dark. The moon and stars obscured behind thin clouds. I can barely see our island as I turn back for one last look at it. I wave, even though I know there's no one there to see it. Goodbye, Ray. The boat and I sail into the black night. I wake up confused, unsure of where I am at first. I meant to stay awake the whole night. By my guess, it shouldn't have taken all that long to get to Martinique. But after working the sails and using my power so much, I must have passed out leaning against the wooden dock. The morning sun shines down on me. Soon it will be mercilessly frying my skin. The boat bobs. I rush to my knees, expecting to see land. But there's nothing. Just a world of ocean, blue as far as the eye can see. I try to remain calm, but panic is causing my heart to pound against my ribs. In no time, the map is out in front of me, spread on the deck. I'm sailing east into the rising sun, which means that I'm still going in the right direction. I just haven't hit Martinique yet. I'm not moving as fast as I thought I would. Or I passed the island in the night. I realize that it's possible I was wrong all along, and our little island wasn't where I thought it was. I could be anywhere. There could be nothing ahead of me until Africa. Africa. I panic. There's no way I'm making it all the way to Africa. I can't believe that Ray didn't have some kind of GPS. Or maybe there was one that I just didn't know about. One that's still at home in the shack on the beach. A place that sounds much more appealing than it did last night. I stare at the map for a long time as I gnaw on some of the jerky-like meat I brought with me. In the end, I take out the compass and set myself sailing north-northwest. At least that way, I'm bound to hit some islands. Right? After searching in vain for a glimpse of land with the telescope, I lean back against the deck and take the red rubber ball out of the pocket of my shorts, running it over the backs of my knuckles. I find a pack of cards in my bag. Everything's going to be all right, I tell myself, as I shuffle the cards and begin to lay them out. Just keep yourself busy, or you'll go nuts out here before you get to land. What is all this useless shit? It's my fourth day in the boat before I discover I can unlock my Lorik chest. Ray always said it was something that we had to open together, and it hadn't dawned on me to try now that he's gone. A bounty of shiny, useless-looking items gleam in the sunlight. I had hoped that there'd be a water filtration system magically waiting for me, but it looks like I'm out of luck. Which is worrisome, because I've already made my way through all the coconuts, and the rest of my rations are starting to look dangerously meager. It looks like the chest is just filled with trinkets from a dollar store. My fingers pass over a little black flute-like instrument. I dig through a few more things and pull out a long glove. I slide it on, tugging it all the way up my forearm. When I flex my wrist, a blade shoots out. It comes within an inch of stabbing me in the eye, the entire silver blade almost a foot in length. I'm too tired to even flinch. Great. If I don't want to die of dehydration, at least I've got this. I shudder at the thought. All of it's useless, or at least none of the stuff has come with an instruction manual. I pack everything back inside except for the knife glove. I can practice with that, just in case. The chest goes back into my duffel, and I guzzle the last of a container of water. Then, I use my telekinesis to push the boat farther, faster along the water, hoping with everything I have that I'm going in the right direction. I bet the other guard have better stuff in their chests, or that their sapons are there to explain what they're supposed to do with them. I wondered plenty of times what the other guard are like. What they're doing, if their sapons keep them hidden away from the world in the farthest corners of the globe. But for the first time I wonder if I'm the only one missing out. Is it possible that the other guard are all together somewhere, fighting and training with one another, wondering where I am? Would they even care? Did Ray keep me hidden away because he was afraid they'd rush me into fighting, to make sure I stayed alive? All I have are questions, and the only answer I get is the sun beating down on me. My tongue feels swollen and rough in my mouth. I haven't peed in a long time, which I think is probably a really bad sign. I'm not even sweating anymore. It's nighttime, but I should still be sweating. So much for making it out in the world on my own. My 7th night at sea is the night I'm going to die. So long, Five. It only took a week for you to fuck up completely by disobeying all of Ray's last wishes. Is it even possible for me to die? Ray told me the special charm meant I'd be safe from death as long as one of the guard before me was alive. That being captured was the real thing to fear. But does that mean it works against starvation and dehydration and exposure to the elements as well? Because I don't want to be some kind of half-living, dried-up mummy washing up on the shores of Cuba a month from now. My lips are chapped and peeling, but my tongue has no moisture to wet them. I can barely move. I feel so tired. But I pull my duffel bag closer, hugging it, looping my arms through its straps. I can feel the Lorik chest inside. My whole body hurts, and I can barely keep my eyes open. There's a strange tickle in my chest, and I wonder if it's some kind of death rattle, if this is what Ray felt right before he died. It grows until my entire body feels alive, on fire. So this is what it's like to die. So much for the charm. I close my eyes and hug the bag tighter. I wonder if my symbol will end up burned onto the other guard's legs, even though I'm dying out of order. I'm dying out of order. I refuse to have that be my last thought. I crack my eyes open and my breath catches in my throat. I'm not in the boat. The boat is still there, but it's several yards beneath me. I'm floating towards the cloudless night sky, still holding my bag to my chest. I wonder for a moment if all the guard get shot back into space when they die. Maybe this is part of the stupid plan that forced me to live out in the middle of nowhere, with my 6 sapon. My parched lips curl down into a frown as I speak my final words. Fuck Lorien. And then I'm shooting forward, the wind beating against my face. Flying.